Welcome, believers. This is Lucha Lowdown. I am your host and El Jefe of this podcast, James Kincaid. With me tonight, as always, El Guapo Jeff Budd.
Oh, I like Katrina. Who doesn't?
Very true. Very true. Well, welcome back to Lucha Lowdown, everyone. Lucha Underground is on their mid-season break. Until summer 2017 in an undisclosed time. I've made a couple of overtures trying to figure out when it's going to be coming back and have been rebuffed at every turn. But they are on their midseason break. We are here for you, though, and El Rey Network and Lucha Underground were here for us in a way. They had a greatest hits night this week on Lucha Underground in lieu of a new episode. So they gave us two episodes from season one, Top of the Ladder, and A Unique Opportunity, which were, I believe, the 7th and 8th episodes of Season 1. And,
correct.
And, I mean, it was an enjoyable sort of little step back in time with Lucha Underground. It, it really flies with how far we've gone in Lucha and how well we've gotten to know a lot of the luchadors. So this was actually really fun. Going back and watching. Jeff, what did you think? Because I know you had some thoughts as far as, like, on the outset, as far as us talking about this tonight and doing this.
Yeah, I kind of had to force myself to initiate watching these just because the way Lucha Underground is set up, it's very narrative-based, so it's a story. It's almost like picking up a book that you've already read and just reading a couple of chapters in the middle. And so I didn't know how that was going to work for me, if I was going to enjoy it or not. But I did like it. It was fun seeing how different season one is compared to the more established season three Lucha Underground. You know, it's like they were definitely still testing the waters in a lot of different ways. The looks of certain characters,
yeah,
how they interacted with each other. Some of the storylines, I'll tell you, I don't remember a lot of these matches. And I think that's because I watched season one in that marathon format.
Yes.
Right before season two. So I recorded them all that weekend, and then I would watch them like a few at a time here, a few at a time there, so that I could get through them quickly and get to season two. So it was nice to kind of be able to highlight a couple of different things and appreciate it a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. Is that, you know, going into this, I mean, I'm always excited to watch Lucha Underground, but I was like, you know, you know, just a couple episodes sort of picked out of a hat. It seemed like I actually thought they were going to be doing a best of kind of deal. But once I started watching,
yeah,
it was sort of like stepping back in time, and it just took a couple of minutes. And I was already bought into what was going on in Lucha in that period of time, and rewatching for the first time in, you know, whenever I first saw those episodes, it's been a while. So it was cool for me to sort of revisit that. And like you said, like the different look of some of the characters and just what they were doing and the different vibe. And one of the things that I'm sure, you know, I appreciate is as we were getting introduced to a lot of these, luchadors, cause now they're so established by season three, is that we got a lot of their backstory in these two episodes and everything like that. We got some cool vignettes that we will get to as we're talking about this. So I was really loving, you know, getting to sort of rediscover some of the lore that had made me fall in love with Lucha Underground in the first place. We started out with the, sort of the recap package going into the episode, and usually I don't talk about this, but it made me happy because we get to see El Jefe in this recap package do one of his most memorable, just, you know, battle cries when he yells about the ladder match. And I just, I love that. Dario is awesome, and he's been one of the most consistent things about Lucha Underground. But we kicked off with King Cuerno versus Superfly.
And it was good to see King Cuerno again, am I right?
Literally the first thing I've written on my notes is good to see King Cuerno. And so you are correct, sir, because we still have not seen King Cuerno in season three of Lucha Underground. But here is, you know, it's season one and it's early in season one, so this is one of his first appearances. And we're still getting sort of explained who and what he is, explaining, you know, what Cuerno's all about and why he named his move the Arrow from the Depths of Hell, Vampiro dropping that knowledge on us, and I really appreciated that. I thought I had forgotten about that. I thought that was very cool. We see Superfly, who we do not see in Lucha Underground at any point anymore, and it just, I mean, it harkened back to, you know, Pentagon Jr. and everything like that and everything that went down with Superfly in the weeks to come and everything like that. So what did you think about seeing these two?
Dude, yeah, it felt like such a blast from the past. It reminded me how we had these very different characters back in season one. And, you know, I wasn't attached to anybody. They were all new to me. And so I didn't know who was going to become so established and then who was kind of more a flash in the pan. I just thought it was fun. That's one reason why I can always watch Lucha Libre, you know, just on a Spanish channel or whatever. I find the matches enjoyable. So I don't need any of, like, the dialogue that you get in some other wrestling.
Yeah.
It was cool to see Queen and King Cuerno just in action again. I missed him. Dude, I missed Melissa with her highlights. I thought that was her at her best. I really liked her and how she looked. And that's when I fell in love with her, was while watching season one. Don't get me wrong. She's still perfect looking, especially in person. But I don't know, man. She was just ravishing.
That dress she was wearing in this episode was out of sight. Just lights out. Woo.
Dude, I almost said out of sight. We are friends.
We are in sync. And to that end, sort of the Striker Vampiro relationship again that we share is that I noticed with Drago watching over the match, because of course we got that great Drago and King Cuerno feud in season one. We got Matt Striker saying Drago watching like a gargoyle, which it was really true. That's what he looked like. But Vampiro saying, I can't believe you just said he looked like a gargoyle. That's awesome. So I wrote this down. I said Vampiro in season one was selling for Matt Striker, and it was a theme of the night that at this point Vampiro was indulging many of Matt's references and things like that. He had not gotten sick of it, and Matt Striker had not sort of abused that inch that Vampiro gave him there. So I appreciated that.
I'm thinking Vampiro went home that night and found out it's only a gargoyle if water is spouting out of it, otherwise it's a grotesque. And so he thinks that Striker made him look like a fool for backing that comment. And so would never sell for him again.
Wow. All right. Fair. Good Lord. I find that highly unlikely.
That's the lore. All right. And until they say that's not canon, it's canon.
I liked Vampiro dropping the Superfly lore, or it was Matt Striker as well dropping the Superfly lore, and Vampiro appreciating
it. Striker really had like his background info on all the different things. The ladder match, he gives the history of ladder matches before that. It's fun listening to that stuff. That's one thing that you've brought up before about Lucha Underground too, is how much they talk about the history of different things, that they'll casually bring up other promotions and cite different wrestlers and characters who are famous for, you know, either maneuvers or a type of match. And I think that's terrific. As just fans of wrestling, you know, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I 100% co-sign on that. That is a part of Matt Stryker's style that I think just really lends itself to, you know, credibility, that nobody's ignoring anything that has happened. He really is a historian in every sense of the word and brings that to his commentary. And yeah, I certainly appreciate it as well. So it was good to hear some of that early stuff again. I really enjoyed the match with Superfly and King Cuerno. King Cuerno got the win with the thrill of the hunt or whatever it is.
Nobody wins their debut match, man.
Yeah, well, Superfly, he was no exception. And, I mean, it did make me miss King Cuerno even more, because he really is one of my favorite luchadors. I love the look of him. I think his mask is great. His entrance is great. His moveset is top-notch. I know he lost the death match, but we got to get King Cuerno back at some point. I really miss the guy on the weekly basis in Lucha Underground.
Dude, I miss this feud between him and Drago.
Yeah.
And it reminded me how great that was. I like the idea of King Cuerno going after, like, you know, these like mythological creatures, or, I mean, even in the sense, I understand why he went after Mil Muertes. That's a real trophy too, if you could get it.
I would love to see Aerostar and Phoenix have to find wherever King Cuerno is holed up in to take on the Snake Tribe with them once Drago betrays them to try and bring him back. Because,
dude,
man, Would Vibora not be a great pelt for King Cuerno? Him taking on the Snake Tribe and getting those skins would be right up his alley, I feel.
That would be awesome. That would be so sick.
I'm all about that action. And he's hunted Drago before, so if Drago goes missing or something, who else to pick up the scent?
But he's King the only Cuerno. One who can track him.
Yeah, that would be so sick. So we got to bring King Cuerno back. But this was a great little step in time to see him back in action. He's terrific.
That would be such a great way to make him like an anti-hero, too.
Yeah. He is the Boba Fett of Lucha Underground. He really is. All right. From there, we got to this is my why I love Lucha moment of the week, by the way. It's I had forgotten about how freaking awesome the Pentagon Jr. promo packages were. And just the whole, just the narration talking about, you know, how he was trained in Mexico, but in order to become like even deadlier, he went to Japan, and they were dropping all this feudal Japan knowledge and everything. And just with Pentagon fighting all throughout it, the Pentagon Jr. promo packages are one of the things that made me fall in love with him as a wrestler and why he's my favorite guy going today. So seeing this again and just how awesome it was, that's my why I love Lucha. And I suspected that you probably have one of your own a little bit later on in this episode and next week. But what did you think about this?
I forgot how they used to do these promo packages in season one. I do remember who we'll be talking about later as far as the promo package goes, because it got me very excited for that character. And I remember texting you about him before he even had his first match. But yeah, I like the idea of the world building and the depth of the characters and their history. So yeah, we're getting like some Japanese history here. And then, like you said, in the entire time, it's footage of him like fighting and training. And then at the end, he snaps the guy's arm and just his dark roots.
It was so cool.
It's so freaking awesome.
It was. It really was. And I missed that outfit, too, the sort of ninja-style outfit.
I got to stop you there. At this point, I thought Pentagon Jr. looked like such a tool.
Why?
I was not a fan of Pentagon Jr. first half of season one. Not until he started snapping arms and having some sort of Dark Master. I thought he looked like a douchebag.
See, to me, he looked like he stepped out of Mortal Kombat to me.
Well, and I forget who it is. I don't think they reference him as a Mortal Kombat character.
But they
reference
Mortal Kombat, I think, in regards to Prince Puma and Phoenix, I think.
And Phoenix, yeah, they did. And I was just like, it's so fitting. No, I think you're right as far as he definitely seemed like a Mortal Kombat character. And I was even getting from that promo, that would be like one of those things, you know, if you beat the game with Pentagon Jr.,
yeah,
you would get that page, and it would tell you about all the things that he had done. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, he born and raised in Mexico, ended up doing his training in Far East, you know, stuff like that. So that's what I was getting from it.
Yeah.
And then it would probably cut to a couple of different match scenes with him.
So sick. It just made me smile so much to see it again. So
also,
yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
No, that's it.
I was going to say, did you ever play with karate fighters in the late 90s?
Yes, I played with karate fighters.
If those things were still around, I would go for all the Lucha characters as karate fighters. I could so see Pentagon Jr. as a karate fighter toy.
That would be sick. Oh, man, we're coming up with some good ideas tonight, man.
I think so. We're hitting rocks, man, because I could also totally see Mundo with just the way they would design his like his legs and everything. It would be perfect. They should bring those back.
Absolutely. So from there, we got Chavo Guerrero versus Phoenix. And again, very early on, and Chavo was featured pretty prominently in the early going of season one of Lucha Underground with his feud with Blue Demon Jr. And so he's facing off with Phoenix here. We had dueling chants here. The believers were conflicted on who to cheer for, with a lot backing Chavo Guerrero and a lot backing Phoenix, which is interesting now because I think if you put them against each other today, all the goodwill and all and everything that Phoenix has done for the believers, now I think that would not be the case, correct?
Dude, that first thing I wrote down was the mixed chance. I think you're absolutely right because Phoenix is so over at this point. But, you know, Chavo, he's a Guerrero. You know, he came in as one of the more established wrestlers. And I think that's why you get that. Because, I mean, he clearly was still in the wrong for this storyline. He had, you know, taken out Blue Demon Jr.
Yeah.
And Phoenix was a face from the beginning. Dude, I don't even remember Sexy Star being pissed about that. So it was just kind of nice seeing this match and seeing Phoenix and Sexy Star together.
Seeing
and then
Chavo and Pentagon together.
Dude, totally forgot about that too. But then I was picking up on some things as far as Vampiro.
Yes.
Already being complimentary towards Pentagon Jr.
Yes.
But saying that he was making a couple of career mistakes as far as backing Chavo and needed someone else to direct him. I thought that was very interesting.
Yep, I was thinking about that too as I was watching, and also when we get to Prince Puma later, just harkening back to
Dude,
that
yeah.
as well. Chavo picked up the big win here in what I thought was a good match, and we saw a crazy corkscrew from Phoenix in it, but Chavo got the win And then, yeah, we got Sexy calling him out afterward. You know, I love Angry Sexy Star.
Scream out in English, man.
Yeah. Pendejo. I liked it too. I thought that was very good. From there, we got what I think was probably one of your favorite things as far as stepping back in time here with Lucha Underground. And that was, we got the teasing of Cage's debut with a promo package. What did you think, Jeff?
Dude, all right. It's fun traveling down memory lane and watching some of the stuff, because I remember the Cage promos, because there was more than one, and we actually did get one, I think, in the next episode as well. Do you remember me texting you about Cage?
Yes.
And do you remember how you responded?
I do not remember how I responded.
You were very not a fan of Cage at that point.
What did I say? Because
I would text you when I was watching episodes, and you know, you'd be all excited that, like, because you would ask me, it's like, have I seen Drago yet and things like that.
Yeah.
And then I was just like texting you stuff like, whoa, man, who's this Cage guy? I can't wait to see Cage.
Well, you know, just as far as people to throw your backing behind, I mean, Pentagon and Drago, way cooler. I mean, I love Cage. He just, like, I think I was so enthralled with wanting to be into the luchadors themselves that other than Mundo, I was like, nah, man, I don't really need, like, another, like, big muscle-bound guy. I'm watching Lucha Underground here. I mean, and Cage can fly and everything like that. Don't get me wrong. But just stylistically, I was like, nah, man, I'm really into these guys right now.
I totally get what you mean by that. But then I think that's how we really start getting the Mortal Kombat fight game mentality, is that the characters are so different.
Yeah.
And their move sets are different. And it's like, yeah, Cage is definitely one of the slower, heavy-hitting characters that you would want. You know, him and Big Rick, it would be solid hits.
Yeah.
Where with a Phoenix character, you got to know those combos. Memorize those combos or you're fucked, you know?
Yeah. No, and so that was...
I was going to say, I like the Cage promos because it reminds me of a kid. I remember different wrestlers having promos like that, and I kind of missed it. Because WWE does nothing like that anymore.
Yeah,
not really.
This was really a reminder of how well Lucha Underground did at building characters and using all those old school sort of wrestling techniques to do so. Like this, the Cage package was great. I found it interesting that he says he's not a superhero and everything like
and
that.
And no superpowers.
Yeah, and no superpowers.
How ironic.
Yeah, yeah, now he does. And also just how much, you know, he loves comic books and superheroes and stuff like that. So I thought that was interesting upon rewatching. But yeah, gotta love the Machine Cage. From there, it was time for the main event for this episode. It was the ladder match with Big Rick, Johnny Mundo, and Prince Puma facing off for the $100,000. I did note here that with Prince Puma coming to the ring, Vampiro just goes with that cancer, Conan. And so it was definitely alluding to, you know, I appreciated that because whether it was planned or not, it sure seems like these seeds were being planted very early on in Lucha Underground.
Yeah, I don't know how much was planned as far as that goes, but yeah, Vampiro never had a positive thing to say about Conan.
Not once.
Not once. And he even criticizes him even in the match. It's funny, because Vampiro talks about the viciousness of Prince Puma and then says it has to do with the poison of Conan. And I was just like, oh boy, how much has Vampiro encouraged Prince Puma to be vicious at this point? It's just kind of funny to hear him say that.
It's different when Vampiro encourages it.
Exactly. Yeah, Conan was doing it wrong.
But this is where we also got Matt, the ladder match historian in this, which Vampiro certainly appreciated. Again, he was selling for Stryker here. I like that they were referencing Danny Trejo as Machete in the crowd. I thought that was great. So what did you think of this match, though? I mean, it was a fun main event, I thought. And I liked that it was for the $100,000, too. I just enjoyed that as far as what they were vying for in this ladder match. Because keep in mind, there still was no Lucha Underground championship at this point.
Yeah, so there was really no reason to, like, call out anybody unless it was for a personal vendetta. Or, yeah, Mundo wanted his money from, what, episode one?
Yeah.
I think is when he was owed it. So, yeah, this was, like, the first main storyline. What I liked was that Mundo had Dario's key as collateral.
Yes.
And we didn't even know what the key did yet.
I know.
It's just so funny looking back now.
Yeah, didn't know what the key did. Also, I like the references as far as, you know, they're really putting over Mundo at this point as far as being an international superstar and all these things that he's done and everything like that. So we're getting, like, you know, really building up Mundo here. The crew showed up. Now, I pretty much...
I hated the crew back then.
Dude, so did I. The crew were some... And, like, we were supposed to not like them, But man, yeah. I was definitely ice cold on the crew. So I was, you know, not big into them. They showed up in this match because they're here to help Big Rick. In watching this, I was like, man, Big Rick, like I would totally be cool with him coming back to the Temple. I like Big Rick. I liked what he brings. Like, God, he's such an imposing force in the ring. You know, if used correctly, I think he's a valuable asset.
Yeah, I miss Big Rick also, and I liked something that Big Rick does in the next episode. I also like that this was that story that was going on with Puma and Mundo. You know, they started out as friends. Things kind of went a little sour. They're obviously rivals, and so they're conflicted because obviously they work together to go against Big Rick, but at the same time, you know, they can't let the other one win in any sort of way. And they're kind of testing themselves against each other. And then Conan is whispering in Puma's ear that, you know, stay away from Mundo. Mundo's a bad influence and all of that. One thing I really liked was it was the spot where Puma was outside and Mundo pushes the ladder over to fall on him.
Oh, yes, yes.
It's like a cartoon. And then the ladder just goes right over. Yeah, it was. And Puma just stands there, cringe, and it just goes right over him.
See, I liked that was great, and I liked the spot right before that, which is when Mundo ducks and Puma dives straight through the ladder and into the crew. I thought that was a sick spot. That was awesome. And then I liked that, like, pretty much all of the crew got put through a table in this match. That was great. There were some really cool high spots in this match. I like the Mexican standoff reference from Vampiro, and Matt Stryker wasn't going to touch it. And he's like, Vampiro's just like, what? It is Lucha Libre after all. So that was pretty good. The end of the world followed by the 6:30 to Big Rick.
6:30 on the Big Rick.
Yeah, that was good. Dude, Big Rick press slam through the table was vicious.
Dude, yeah, that was great. Also, this has nothing to do with any of the moves, but just a question I'm asking. Who are those two girls that were in the front that were checking out Mundo, and where are they now?
I like to Stryker just going, hello, ladies, like all Val Venus-y too. It's just like, just not pussyfooting around at all, so to speak.
It's the Temple. That's how things roll around there.
It's fast and loose, hopefully. I thought I really enjoyed this match. I thought it was a really good main event. I thought the end was a little abrupt, you know, as far as a crescendo and everything like that. But Mundo got the big win. He got the money, which we had referenced earlier this season, that he held on to most of the money, except for, you know, when he had to pay off somebody because of the, you know, internet photos or whatever they were. But
he fought so hard for that money.
it's funny just seeing that, like, the threads and the tiebacks and everything, like, now that we're going through season three. So I think they picked a good couple of episodes for everyone to enjoy this week and remember, because yeah, that briefcase does come into play in season three. And then we got Dario Cueto and Mundo coming face to face, and Cueto got the key to the face to close out the show. Poor Dario. But he was rocking some Six Shades in the next episode.
But look cool.
Yeah, he does. But before we get into that, and we're going to talk about the second episode, A Unique Opportunity, it's time to take care of a little bit of Lucha business. And that is, we here at Lucha Lowdown appreciate all you believers listening to us. If you want to help get the word out about the show, please tell your friends, tweet about it. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at Lucha Lowdown. Most important thing you can do is subscribe to us, rate us, and review us on iTunes. Help get the good word of mouth going on iTunes is the best way you can help. And again, tell your friends. We in the wrestling community, we're all, you know, tight-knit group. We've loved interacting with you. The response has been great so far. So keep it up. We appreciate it. Again, you can subscribe to us on Audioboom, on iTunes. You can email us if you want to get in touch with us directly, luchalowdown@gmail.com, or send us a direct message on Twitter at luchalowdown. Find us on Facebook. All of that jazz. We appreciate you. And now, back to the show. So the second episode this week of the Lucha Underground Greatest Hits was A Unique Opportunity. El Jefe kicked us off in his sunglasses, sporting the shiner courtesy of that key to the face that Johnny Mundo gave him. And he was getting it from the crowd, and he just dropped the great, I love you too. And then we were announced that we're going to have two 10-way styled matches that for A Unique Opportunity. And the first 10-way was a one-fall-to-a-finish match with a lot of interesting talent in it, and I was looking out for one luchador that I thought might be in this one, but they are actually in the second 10-way match. But what did you think about this first one?
I liked it. I liked how this episode started, that the 10 of them were already in the ring. I also like the premise that they have the two different 10-person matches, but it's a different type of match.
Yes.
I thought that was interesting. And I would say, with the exception of a few characters in the second match, I would call this A-Squad.
Agreed. Absolutely. Well, there was the one character I was looking for is definitely a B or a C squad character. But it was in this one that we got Pentagon Jr., who was the only one that was selling for Masquerita Sagrada, by the way. He was the only one taking any bumps from the guy.
That's how much Pentagon sucked back then. He was getting the shit kicked out of him by Masquerita Sagrada.
Shut up. He never sucked. Great promos. He's always been great. But
he stinks, and I don't like him.
I liked we got a great Ring the Bell from Dario here to kick us off. I liked, again, we had Machete in the crowd and on commentaries. Machete don't text, but he watches Lucha Underground. I thought that was tremendous. I liked Puma selling the ladder match with the sort of the wraps over his midsection. I thought that was great because we didn't mention, but in the last episode, one of the biggest spots was him going through the ladder and breaking it. Was tremendous. Great spot. I think my favorite part of the match was seeing Phoenix and Puma go at it one-on-one for a period of time as they were sort of like going kick for kick with one another. I thought
dude,
that
totally.
Was awesome.
That was my favorite part of the match. And then it made me think, because I honestly don't remember ever watching that either, even though I must have. I would love to see Phoenix and Puma go at it again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, their characters never really interact that much. So this was a fun, unique treat that we don't get to see that much in Lucha.
It was great. And I mean, just looking at it, you know, as we have all this knowledge of what would become of Lucha Underground, that, I mean, two of the biggest baby faces in Lucha Underground having this face off, you know, it's kind of like akin to sort of an Ultimate Warrior Hulk Hogan in the Royal Rumble type setting almost here, you know, so that was cool. We got a very, very other cool sequence because this was not an over the top battle royal. What I wrote down is the aerial party, which is each guy taking their turn, essentially just diving into the morass of the other wrestlers. That was great too. That was a real standout moment.
So it's fun. The crowd loves it.
And the crowd loves me. Yes. And as we may or may not have remembered, Phoenix picked up the big win here in the first 10 man. My heart still always roots for Pentagon here, but I knew Phoenix was going to win from history. But
over Puma.
Yes, which was huge.
Yeah.
Which was a very big, especially in season one and what season one would become. From there, we got the second of the cage promos. It was very similar to the first one. But, you know, I was thinking of you as always, Jeff, as such a cage supporter.
Exactly.
And from there, we got a backstage vignette of what I wrote down is Conan being an asshole to Prince Puma. He was being a real dick, man. I was just like, dude.
When I was watching season one and I didn't know how it was going to play out, I was wondering exactly what Conan's motivations with Prince Puma were. I was wondering if he was going to betray him, if he was setting him up in some way. I mean, even the way this vignette ended, it was like, you know, eventually you're not going to get these shots and then I'll be gone. It's like, okay, so you're basically using Prince Puma is what you're saying to me. As long as he's a top talent and has a chance at, you know, whatever they didn't even know yet, just this opportunity. It's like, that's when you'll stick around. So I was kind of like with Vampiro. I was like, oh, let's get Prince Puma away from this guy. I love it when someone has all the talent and skill in the world. That's when these people show up that, you know, it's like, you can't get any further without me.
Yeah.
And I always thought Conan, for the most part, was a hindrance. At a certain point later in season one, I thought he kind of proved his loyalty and I was sort of okay with him. But I would have been fine from a story perspective if Puma was just on his own scrapping.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you say that because I felt the same way, too, when I was watching season one. I was like, all right, when's Conan going to betray Prince Puma? Because that's the way it seemed like it was going this whole time. And I thought it was sort of going to be a vindication moment for Vampiro almost.
Right.
But it almost seems like they changed directions midstream and decided to not go that route with Conan.
And yeah, remember when Vampiro used to have like those one-on-one interviews with people?
Yes, which I loved.
And he had an interview with Conan, I think.
Yes, he did.
It was like very hostile.
I think they almost all were very hostile because he had one with Pentagon Jr. and he had one with Conan, and they both turned very hostile. So
he's testing the waters with Pentagon.
Yeah, absolutely. But so, yeah, I agree with you. All the signs pointed that some type of Conan betrayal were in the works, but they went a different direction there. We got to our 10-man part two, which was Battle Royal style. And I was looking around. Some of the faces that jumped out to me were early Famous B and how he looked and everything like that.
Famous B scared to be there.
As Chris DeJoseph said, he went from jobber to robber. Now in season three of Lucha Underground, this is definitely the jobber phase for Famous B, and he was the first one eliminated in this match. But the other ones that stood out to me, not because of what they've accomplished per se, but more so because of what they have not, but Ricky Mandel in the ring, who we know will become part of Worldwide Underground, at least he was at that live event we were at. And then we got this is who I was looking for to see, because my least favorite luchador in the history.
I second that.
History of Lucha Underground is Pimpinella, or Pimpy, as Matt Stryker likes to call it. And I just was like, "Yep, I knew, I remembered you being in one of these, and there you are." So, and you know what? A more better decision to not bring that person back just couldn't have been made. I guess it's like sort of Luchador Goldust, and I love Goldust, but this character just—I don't know. I guess I'm not woke enough to deal with Pimpinella, but...
Is this when you fell in love with Mil Muertes? Because Mil is the one who eliminated him?
I had that written down. I just wrote, Mil eliminates Pimpy. Good. He just went right after him, just like I would have, to toss him out of there. And Mil attacked Pimpy, like, in the same way that just, like, it seemed like with utter disgust and just with extreme prejudice, so to speak. And that's exactly why, I think, why Mil and I we were on a wavelength right from the start. So, yeah, Famous B was the first out, then Ricky Mandel, and then Pimpy were eliminated. And I have written down here, Katrina, my God. just terrific.
Vintage Katrina when... She looked like that's how she could have been dressed, just walking off the street, coming to work, you know?
Are you implying something?
Like, no. Like, she just is dressed like a normal woman.
Yes.
Is what I'm saying. She doesn't seem like a sorceress or anything to me.
Yeah.
Like, her hair was still, like, normal, and she was wearing a skirt and a hot top.
Yeah.
Like, she just looked sexy. She didn't look evil sexy to me.
Yeah, she definitely looks sexy, though. My God, Katrina. But speaking of sexy...
She could do anything in that skirt.
Got eliminated by Chavo was Sexy Star, so he was definitely getting the better of Sexy in the early going of their feud here. Then the crew were pretty much eliminated in order after that. And
how dare they take up three spots in a 10-man match? You know, oh, God, I do not like them.
God, thank God for Mil Muertes eliminating Pimpy, though. So the final three were Chavo, Mundo, and Mil Muertes. Mil Muertes.
And thank God for Dario for killing off so many members of the crew.
Yeah, he did. He did.
It's responsible for two fatalities. And then the other character was Salvage, fortunately. Yeah,
yes. But Mil Muertes won the Battle Royal. And that set him versus Phoenix. And as I was thinking about this while I was watching, you know, we talked about how great the Mil Muertes versus Prince Puma feud has been, how it's transcended the seasons. But the Phoenix and Mil Muertes feud is another one that is comparable to that. So this was a genesis of that for the unique opportunity.
Wait, you know who I was in that match, though?
Who?
I was the little pouting, unhappy kid.
Oh, yeah. Damn it. I noticed that too. Yeah, just upset that
Mil
Muertes won. Yeah, absolutely.
As soon as Mundo's luck ran out, because Mundo pulling his typical Battle Royale shenanigans with his super powerful core, constantly hanging on the ropes and just barely not touching the ground.
He only works out his glamour muscles.
Dude, that guy can probably do at least 15 crunches. Bare minimum.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, you're right. You would be that little pouting kid. But no, Mil endeared himself to me. And just watching it again, I was like, wow, I wonder if that was the moment. When I was like, you know what, this Mil guy and I think he and I are going to get along really famously here.
Rocking his Felix Jaeger pants.
Yes, dude. Seriously, I wonder if he's a fan. But
oh, dude, then now I'm one over.
Yeah, exactly. So that sets up Mil versus Phoenix for the unique opportunity one of many that Dario will be offering in the temple over the years. But we get Dario Cueto as Mill and Phoenix are in the ring coming out with the very first Lucha Underground championship, which, of course, would not last very long thanks to Cage when he ripped it in half. But it was cool to see it in one piece again. It's been a while since I've gotten to look upon it, and I have written down here again, Katrina, my goodness. Mill versus Phoenix, and it just, again, harkening back to what would become one of the great feuds in Lucha Underground history. What did you think watching this again?
What was kind of cool to me, and like I said, this is very season one type stuff, is before Dario even comes out and shows the belt, Phoenix and Mil Muertes are both already in the ring.
Yeah.
And the two of them are just sort of talking shit to each other like two normal opponents. And it's just kind of funny to see Mil Muertes acting like that, you know?
Yeah, definitely, as he's evolved. Well, I mean, to be fair, he had not sort of been killed off again, so it changes him. And it has changed
him.
Oh,
yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Like, every time he's gone under in the Grave Consequences match, he's sort of evolved a little bit and become slightly different and, like, almost crazier each time, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like all the different Hulk personas.
Yeah.
And I don't mean Hogan.
Well, I don't have a 10-inch penis, Terry Bollea, but... He's talking about Hulks. Sorry.
I just never want to be asked under oath the size of my penis.
Well, no, because mine is not that size.
I'd rather be brought up on perjury charges.
Yeah, you just lie through your teeth. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
I'll tell you, my favorite part of the match would be right after Katrina was choking Phoenix on the ropes, and then she was dusting her hands off on her chest.
Yeah.
Delightful. I could watch that part over and over again.
Dude. So Mil Muertes prevailed here, and the unique opportunity was that he then would enter number 20 in Aztec Warfare, and Phoenix would then have to enter number 1 for the, at this point, vacant Lucha Underground Championship to become the first champion. And so it was a big time opportunity. And Mil Muertes, like you said, the flatliner at this point was unbeatable, and nobody kicked out of that. And we got a great lick of death from Katrina to Phoenix. And then, something we don't see.
So no one walks away a loser, basically.
Yeah, so something we don't see too often now is that then Katrina and Mil sucking face a little bit.
I forgot about that, too. Yeah.
Which, man, good for you, Mil. part of me wanted to be like, I wonder if he just did that in the moment. It's like, you know what? I'm just going to go for this. You're my on-screen person. So we're just going to, just
roll with her. You're fired.
Yeah, just go for the gusto, Mil Muertes. So, and then we got a backstage.
My improv class is paying off.
Yeah. Way to go. She's just livid.
Maybe.
But we got a backstage vignette to close out the show. It was Dario fawning over his Lucha Underground Championship and how pleased the gods would be with it. And
forged from the gold of all seven tribes. I love stuff like that.
Is freaking, it was so freaking awesome that he said that. Again, steeped in lore. And I also love that he's trying to please these gods. So it is another one of those through lines that carry us to season 3 today that he's still trying to do that. I think... that is incredible writing and just great lore for Lucha Underground. I love that. And we got the tease of Matanza talking about, sorry, you can't touch it. I know how you love to destroy beautiful things. The irony of that is that, of course, somebody else would destroy that belt and that Matanza would be very much so a future champion holding a very similar belt. So,
yeah, I was trying to think. I was like, did Matanza hold his belt when he was champion? Pretty sure he did, right?
Yeah, I think
or
so.
Or did Dario always hold it for him?
It could be. I don't remember.
I'd have to go back and watch.
But this was a very fun walk down Lucha Underground memory lane. And so if they continue to do them, I think we'll continue to bite and review them and talk about them and just things that we've forgotten and just fun tidbits and how it all ties into Lucha Underground now. But yeah, this was just such an even more unexpected delight watching these.
Yeah, I like the reminiscing. I like being able to walk down memory lane with you,
Yeah.
And then just it listening to Dario name drop Aztec Warfare for the first time.
Yeah.
It's like that, and just knowing what that turned into. And then the fact that I'm pretty sure Phoenix has always been first in Aztec Warfare, except for this most recent one.
He didn't even get to be
part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, which stinks.
Yeah, he was, because Dario made a big point of that in season 2, saying that he was going to have to start first again. because he was so pissed. Or no, it was Katrina.
Katrina, because yeah. Phoenix had just stolen the championship. He was champion for like a week.
Yeah.
I know someone who knows what that feels like.
Wow. but there is one thing I want to talk about before we go, and it does not have anything to do with Lucha Underground, except for the sense it does have to do everything with professional wrestling, its history, and professional wrestling greatness. And that is some pretty big news this week that we cannot go without talking about. And that is the fact that the Olympic hero, the Olympic gold medalist with a broken freaking neck, Kurt Angle, is going to be going into the WWE Hall of Fame this year, the night before WrestleMania. That is huge news. I was so stoked to see that announced. ESPN broke the news first, and WWE's done a couple great video packages for Kurt. I mean, this is just so well-deserved, and just I love Kurt Angle. What were your thoughts on it, Jeff?
I'm very happy with what this year's class is already. And Kurt Angle, hero of mine in and out of the ring, both you and I have talked about over the years how much we've loved him. He was one of my favorites back when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Love the three eyes. I had the three eyes written on my math binder.
Dude, I too lived by the three eyes. And like every time.
And then like I said on Facebook, and I think you'll agree with me, sometimes we begrudgingly also lived by the big A.
Yes. Intensity?
Didn't want to. I had the big A thrust upon me months at a time.
Intensity, integrity, and intelligence. Just always got to pause with the intelligence. And it's true. It's
always
true. The milk truck stuff. I mean, he was so entertaining.
I miss the milk truck.
I still think, you know, health, God willing, that he still, I think he should have a match with Rusev at WrestleMania. I think that would be great. You know,
that would be an excellent matchup.
Yeah. And just, you know, it's a classic American hero versus, you know, the foreign enemy and everything like that. So I'm all about this. I hope we see him in the Royal Rumble. But Kurt coming back home is a beautiful thing.
Just an all-around talent, too. You know, it's one thing, obviously, he came in with his Olympic pedigree, but, boy, once he, like, established his character, wasn't he just fun to listen to? And the skits that they had with him, and I loved his character.
Yeah. So, well-deserved to Kurt Angle. Congratulations. That is going to do it for us this week, though, and we will keep you posted as far as what our movements are going to be, what's going on with Lucha Underground and El Rey Network. But for Jeff Budd, I'm James Kincaid. Good night, everybody.